From the Carter Subaru Studios, this is Cairo Nights with Jake Skorheim.
Welcome back to Cairo Nights. It's the 9 o'clock hour. It's 9:06. We've had a really great show. We've had a lot of great guests. We've had a lot of great conversation. A ton of interesting stories tonight, too. So if you haven't had a chance to listen to the first 2 hours of the show, shame on you. Shame. Deep, deep shame. Go get the podcast, Cairo Nights with Jake Skorheim. It's free. We're not even going to charge you for it, at least at first. Only the first one's free. No, that's not true. They're all free. Just download them, follow them, whatever you do, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, wherever you get them, download the podcast. We post a ton of great stuff there, updated nightly, right after the show. You're going to love it, I promise. All right, let's get to it. This was a story that is near and dear to my heart. I don't know if it's near and dear to my heart because I think it's a good thing. It's near and dear to my heart because it scares the heck out of me. I'm very scared of this. What am I talking about? Well, of course, I'm talking about bears.
We're glad you're home, honey.
Big bear, chase! Big bear, chase!
What did he say?
What? Big bear, chase me!
All right, so that, of course, is from the great outdoors, but that could be a reality soon. Listen to this headline. You can read about this on MyNorthwest.com. And if you're like me, if you are a person who spends a great deal of your time out in the woods, I actually have woods in my backyard. This is very, I doubt there's going to be any bears in them, probably, because you got to go through like a lot of different neighborhoods to get to my woods. But if this bear knows how to travel or go discreetly down sidewalks, then yeah, there's a very good chance that I could have a bear in my woods, but probably not a great chance. But I do a lot of hiking in the summertime, especially with my family. This show is on at night, which means that I have a lot of time in the mornings to just chill out. So in the summertime, because I have kids, because we want to get those kids as far away from the inside of our house as we can possibly get them, we spend a great deal of time hiking. We go on awesome, nature hikes. We go everywhere, just anywhere there's a hiking trail, that's where you'll find us. But maybe not for long, because listen to what they're going to do. This is a headline. You can read about this on MyNorthwest.com. Here's a headline. Grizzly bears could soon roam Washington forest in controversial plan. Oh! All right, so what is this about? Is there going to be a bear in the woods? I mean, yes, there's bears in the woods right now, but is there going to be grizzly bears in the woods in Washington Forest? Listen to this story. Grizzly bears could soon find a home in Washington Forest decades after they were hunted out of the area. According to the Washington Department of Fish and Wildlife, WDFW for short, although that still sounds kind of like a mouthful, grizzly bears haven't been seen in the North Cascades since all the way back in 1996. I wasn't aware it's been that long since we've seen them, but that's a long time. Therefore, in this area, in this region, they are considered an endangered species. So why are we talking about them now? Why do you have to worry about grizzly bears if they haven't been around since 1996? Last week, the U.S. National Park Service and Wildfire Service outlined a plan to reintroduce bears to the North Cascades. So if you spend your time hiking outdoors, this is what we're talking about. The plan states that 3 to 7 grizzly bears would be released into the North Cascades every year for 5 to 10 years. The agencies want to foster a population of around 25 bears before switching to adaptive management. They say that grizzly bears are needed to restore the biodiversity of the ecosystem, to build ecological resilience, and for the benefit and enjoyment of present and future generations of people, which is what their stated plan is. Grizzly bears are very scary. I don't know if you guys have any experience with grizzly bears, if you've read much about grizzly bears, or if you've seen the movie. Oh my gosh, what is that movie? It's escaping me right now. It's got Alec Baldwin, and it has, what's the guy from Silence of the Lambs? Oh my gosh, this is killing me. I should have thought of this before I went on there. The Edge. Thank you. The Edge. Thank you, text line. It is The Edge. That's a fantastic movie. Very, very scary. Anthony Hopkins, that's the name. So Alec Baldwin and Anthony Hopkins are flying around Alaska. Their light aircraft goes down. They survive the crash, and now they have to figure out how to get back to the cabin that they were staying at. But in the woods are bears, like in Alaska. They have grizzly bears. It's very scary, and this grizzly bear like chases them because grizzly bears hunt people. Most bears don't. Like, most bears will scatter if they see humans or hear humans. Black bears, brown bears, they're going to try to steer clear of humans, which is why when you're walking through the woods, they recommend that you make loud noises, clap your hands, sing happy songs. You can whistle. We do all these things when we're walking through the woods. You can pound sticks together. if you saw, oh my gosh, what's the other movie I'm thinking of? Parent Trap. I don't know if that works, but whatever. So yeah, other bears are a little skittish. Grizzly bears, not so much. They're very territorial. They say if you see a grizzly bear, what is it? A grizzly bear, you're supposed to play dead, right? Don't run, because if a grizzly bear sees you running, they will chase you and they will catch you because they're very, very fast and they're scary. Let's see here. Grizzly bears, back to the article before I'm just talking about grizzly bears. Grizzly bears occupied the North Cascades for thousands of years as an essential part of the ecosystem, distributing native plant seeds and keeping our wildlife populations in balance, according to the Park Service. Jay Inslee is a supporter of this, which makes me not sure about it. He says, I appreciate the Biden administration's efforts to restore grizzly bears to the North Cascade ecosystem. The last confirmed grizzly sighting in this prime habitat was nearly 30 years ago, and slow reintroduction will restore balance to our state's natural heritage. Not everyone's super excited about the plan, though. Some lawmakers have pushed back, saying that the bears will threaten farmland and livestock and, most importantly, human lives. Let's see here. This is a quote from one of these folks. The final environmental impact statement reveals the Biden administration is more intent on pushing policies about Central Washingtonians than for them, says Representative Dan Newhouse. He said in a statement last week, the Fish and Wildlife Service and National Park Service held public comment sessions in my district, where the overwhelming majority of voices, which I heard firsthand, were adamantly opposed to the introduction of grizzly bears. Their voices have been shut out of the process. This administration's blatant disregard for public opinion and the unwavering commitment to the whims of the extreme environmentalist. This is again from Representative Dan Newhouse. He says many of whom don't live anywhere near where the bears will be is proven by the announcement of their preferred alternative today. Newhouse is referring to the public comment section that took place in Okanagan, and this was in last October. He has been opposing this since 2017 and basically citing the lack of community input and feedback from local authorities. They haven't totally decided on what the plan is going forward. So they're still going to have to figure out the ins and outs of this, how it's going to work. But what do you guys think about grizzly bears being reintroduced to the Cascades? Is it a good idea? Is it a bad idea? Is it going to cost human lives? Do they have I guess there's always the potential that it could cost human lives. I actually went out. I've only seen a bear in nature, I've seen a couple bears in nature, a couple from a great distance. Like when I was on a cruise ship, you kind of see them running along the shore, but you're safe on a cruise ship. They're not going to get you. But another time I was up in Whistler. I don't remember what year it was, but we were up there vacationing doing Whistler things. And we went on a bear tour, which sounds crazy, but you can do that. So we go on a bear tour. So you get on a four-wheel, like a quad, and they take you through the rough forest, and you're going through riverbeds, and you're going on trails and all the fun stuff. It's great. It was a fantastic time. We didn't see squat, bupkis, nothing. We saw nothing on that. I don't even think we saw a bird. But it was fun driving the four-wheelers around. You get to drive through the river, and it was a blast. So we get back to our hotel, and in the back of our hotel, it's like a condo that we were staying at, but just big, there's all these condo areas. That's basically all that Whistler is. It's just condos. So we get to this condo. We get back to this condo. We haven't seen a bear all day, and I am so excited to see a bear. I'm kind of disappointed now because it's not going to happen. This is no joke, and I'm not making this up, and this really happened. I look out the back window of our condo into this kind of backwoodsy area, also where we kept trash. What do you think is sitting there literally munching on our trash? Like right as I get back from this, the irony of going on a full-on bear outing to try to see a bear and not seeing anything, and then we get back to our condo, and I look out the back window, and there's a bear digging through our trash can. I was so excited. I ran outside. This is not a good idea, by the way. Don't do this. If you do see bears, don't do what I did. I run outside and I'm taking pictures of the bear, 20, 30 feet away. How incredibly ridiculous. Don't do that. It's a bad idea. It was a black bear. It was kind of small. I don't think it was going to attack me. And even if it did, I felt confident that I could jump back into the condo really fast. But this black bear was just right there eating our trash. So that's the only time I've seen a bear in public. I highly recommend that you try not to get in the way of these grizzly bears. If you're going to go out there, Stay out of the way of grizzly bears. It's very scary. All right, let's get to the next thing. A quick update on the Francis Scott Key Bridge in Baltimore. NBC was detailing that the search and rescue operation for those missing construction crew members is sadly now just a recovery effort.
NBC News learning the NTSB has located the ship's voyage data recorder. Similar to a plane's black box, it should help investigators find answers to what went wrong on the Dolly causing that deadly crash. Officials announcing overnight the search and rescue operation for six missing construction workers is now a recovery mission. Maryland Governor Wes Moore speaking to Hoda and Savannah this morning.
They had no idea that them going to work was going to turn to a deadly occurrence. They were fathers. They were sons. They were husbands. They were people who their families relied on.
The wife of construction worker Miguel Luna telling our sister station Telemundo he was working on the bridge at the time and she has not heard anything about his whereabouts. The vessel, identified as the Singapore-flagged container ship Dolly, was headed to Sri Lanka. The ship's operator, Synergy, says all crew members have been accounted for and that it's cooperating with the investigation.
One thing we do want to point out as we start to mourn those who likely lost their lives here, this accident happened in one of the worst possible areas, right? Just yards from that bridge. But it also happened at 1:30 in the morning. If that ship would have lost power right now or even earlier around 7 o'clock at the peak of commuting times, so many more people would have lost their lives. The whole country will come together to try and help Baltimore get through this, but this could have been so much worse.
He makes a really great point. I thought about this when I was kind of watching some of the coverage of this and watching the video of this happen. It happened in the middle of the night. There was as few people on the bridge as there probably ever is. So it's really amazing that more people weren't hurt. This was interesting, though, because speaking of the footage of the bridge collapsing, Baltimore Mayor Brandon Scott, he was on with CNN and he was talking about this. And he was talking about the missing workers, the recovery effort. He had a request for CNN, and I thought this was kind of interesting.
Can you give me some sense of what you thought at first light this morning when you saw the pictures of actually what that bridge looks like with the barge slammed into it there? What were your initial thoughts?
Well, it was something out of an action movie. It's something you never think you would see. And being here right now, looking at it, is even more surreal. And it just makes you think about, again, those families, those individuals that were on that bridge, those folks that are even on that vessel, even more, because no one should have to endure. And I'm going to be the first to ask that CNN and everyone else stop showing the video. No one needs to see a possibility of their family member being severely injured or otherwise over and over and over again, because it's just traumatizing our community.
Fair enough, Mayor.
Isn't that interesting? I don't think that's a realistic expectation that they're going to stop playing the collapse. I mean, it's one of those videos that you watch and you just kind of can't believe your eyes. It's so surreal what you're seeing. This massive cargo ship with almost 5,000 cargo containers stacked super, super high, smashing into one of the beams of this huge expanse, this huge bridge expanse, and it knocks it down. I mean, it just the whole thing, like a house of cards, falls down. It's amazing footage to behold. And hopefully when people watch this, they're going to realize that these things have these weak points. And could those weak points be improved for future bridges? Who knows? But, you know, I don't know if it's reasonable that they're going to just stop showing the footage. Although I do understand why he would ask that. You know, people in that area who lost family members on that bridge, probably very much the same way that people who had family members in the Twin Towers, the footage that we have all seen 1,000 times of the Twin Towers coming down would be extra traumatic for somebody who, you know, who lost a family member in that horrible incident. So, you know, I can understand what he's asking. I just don't know how reasonable that request is, but I get it. So speaking of the bridge coming down, this is a major bridge. There's like, I think there's like 30,000 cars that go across this thing daily. There is, it is a huge connector. There's all sorts. It's one of the biggest ports in the country. So how are they going to rebuild this? How quickly can they even rebuild it? President Joe Biden was talking a little bit about this.
It's my intention that federal government will pay for the entire cost of reconstructing that bridge. And I expect the Congress to support my effort. This is going to take some time. The people of Baltimore can count on us, though, to stick with them at every step of the way until the port is reopened and the bridge is rebuilt. You know, we're not leaving until this job gets done. Not leaving until then. So I just want to say God bless everybody who everyone harmed this morning and their families. And may God bless the first responders, many of whom risked their lives.
You said the federal government's also going to pay for the repairs. I'm just curious. This was a ship that appears to be at fault. Is there any reason to believe that the company behind the ship should be held responsible? And then also, you
mentioned... That could be, but we're not going to wait for that to happen. We're going to pay for it to get the bridge rebuilt and open.
I think that's actually a good approach. I mean, this needs to be fixed as quickly as possible. I looked the number up. 31,000 commuters travel across that bridge every single day. So they're going to need to find a new way to get to work. That is a massive problem for that region. Listen to this. So how long is it going to take to rebuild this bridge since we're looking into it? They talked to a professor of civil and systems engineer at Johns Hopkins University. And he said it could take months just to remove the debris and reopen the channel. Now, that is a good thing. Only months, actually, compared to how long it's going to take to rebuild the bridge. It could be in a matter of weeks, but it'll probably be months to clear it. That's such a major port. It's so important that opens up, gets everything flowing back into that port. So then that is the lifeblood of the country, is these ports. So now to the bridge. How long is it going to take to rebuild the bridge? The original Key Bridge, Francis Scott Key Bridge, took 5 years to build back in the 1970s. They said that it took 7 years to rebuild the Sunshine Skyway Bridge over Tampa Bay when that one collapsed. Let's see here. This engineer said, I've lived through quite a few civil infrastructure projects, and they are rarely less than 10 years. So I think that what we're looking at, I think that's what we're looking at. The price tags never seem to be out of the hundred millions of dollars these days. So I'd be shocked if it were not at least hundreds of millions of dollars. When the bridge opened back in 1977, it cost about $60 million. That would be about $316 million in today's dollars. But it's a huge undertaking to rebuild this bridge. But again, like you heard President Biden say there, it is of vital importance. They're going to have probably unlimited funds to rebuild it. There's estimates that it could take, you know, as little as 2.5 years to rebuild it. It could take longer than that. But hopefully they're able to get it back up and going. And, you know, I do think there's some wisdom in, all right, federal government, write the checks, get it done, and then sue the company that is responsible for that ship and, you know, knocking the bridge down. Clearly, they need to foot that bill if it was their error. All right, we got a lot more coming up on the show. Next, we're going to talk to one of my favorite guests. We don't often get him to hang out this long, but I'm going to talk to John Curley about some parenting issues. I heard him talking about this parenting issue on his show yesterday. I was fascinated by it. He and Sherry were talking about a very specific type of parenting that is encouraged these days, and also all these different ways that they are encouraging kids to get therapy and talk about their feelings. But now studies are showing, is it really the best thing to constantly be asking kids about their feelings and talking about their feelings? Maybe not. So we're going to talk with John about that next. Stick around. We're going to be right back here on Cairo Nights.
Listening to Cairo Nights with Jake Skorheim.
Welcome back to Cairo Nights. I have one of my favorite guests on. I say this to all my guests, but with him, I really mean it.
I'm standing here.
That, of course, is John Curley from the John Curley and Sherry Ellicker Show. John, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Great to be here.
You guys were talking about something on your show yesterday. I was listening to it. And
yes.
I thought it was so fascinating.
Mm.
There was something about kids therapy and soft parenting or gentle parenting. Can you tell me a little bit about that?
So I'll send people over to Barry Weiss's podcast, Honestly, where you can hear her interview Abigail Schreier, who's got this new book out called Bad Therapy. And she basically looks at, why are kids so messed up? Here we have the safest, most successful, most comfortable generation ever in the history of man walking the earth. And yet a great portion of kids say they're depressed, they're anxious, suicide, all this other stuff. And she wanted to know why. And she sort of points to the fact that parents have given up parenting and given it over to therapists. And therapists do nothing more than continually talk to the child about how they're feeling. And she says that it's really damaging the children. So she then looks at the three different types of parenting. And she says the absolute worst is gentle parenting that is out there right now, where the parent is not the authority figure. The parent is just constantly asking the child, how do you feel? How do you feel? What can we do about your feelings?
I have experienced this firsthand. I have three young kids.
Yes.
I have a fourth on the way. In 2 months, I'll have four boys. I have an 8-year-old, a 6-year-old, and a 4-year-old. And when my middle kid was in preschool, the preschool had like a little class meeting, and they were telling all the parents, like, hey, there's some new studies out. We actually know how to parent, and you don't. And so we want to teach you the best way to parent your kids.
Right.
And what they said you should do, and my wife was like, this was the point at which she finally stopped trying to bend over backwards to listen to everything that these folks were trying to tell her.
Yeah.
And before, you know, they send the class emails and everybody's on the text chain and it's just ridiculous. So they said, let's say, for example, that your kid is outside in the sandbox and it's time for them to come in for lunch.
Mm-hmm.
Now, in the old days, if you were outside as a kid and your parents wanted you to come in, what would they do?
Call you in. And then they would give you like a countdown. They'd say 5 minutes.
Yes.
And they come in 5, 4, 3... Get in here.
And if your butt wasn't inside when they got to one.
Yeah. They would come out and get you, pull you out of there, or then there would be, you know, circumstances beyond your control, like not going to get dessert, or you got to go to your room, or you can't go outside and play.
And then
again,
it escalates depending on the severity.
Sure. Yeah.
Same with my parents. Yeah. Like they would, you know, and it, all the way up to spankings. So what they told my wife to do, though, is they said, listen, if your kid's in the sandbox and they don't want to get out of the sandbox, the important thing you need to understand is why the kid doesn't want to get out of the sandbox. So what you need to do is you need to go out there and sit down in the sandbox with them. And it's very important. And they had this whole thing that they gave everyone to read. It's very important that you are not taller than them when you're having this conversation. You need to be on their level. It's so important that you're on their level. And you need to discuss it with them until they decide for themselves that they want to come inside.
Yeah. This is a human being that eats their own boogies.
Yes.
Yeah.
And can't wipe their own butt oftentimes.
Right.
These are the people that we're supposed to be listening to. And so we have teachers. So what kind of parenting would that fall under?
That's gentle parenting. Yeah. This is sort of therapist-driven gentle parenting. And as Schreier points out in their book, what you're doing to the child is you are not allowing the kid to feel as if someone else is in control. That you... There's three types of parenting. One is you do it because I told you, and then there's going to be a whack on the bottom and there's no love. The second one, which is authority, where the child looks up to you and wants to know that you're in charge, knows that they don't know anything. So they're in charge. And when mom says go, we go. Why? Because I said so. There's nothing wrong with saying because I said so. The kid doesn't need to be rationed with because they're not rational people. Kids are not just little adults or little people. Kids are little kids.
Their brains have not fully functioned yet.
And she said, you need to be able to show the child that you're in charge. It gives the child a sense of security, which the others don't. The other stuff does not give that child a sense of security. And that's what the child wants to know, that somebody bigger and stronger is helping me and in control and guiding me. And she said, if you do that, when the kid hits 16, they'll want to be an adult. They'll want to get their driver's license because they look up to you.
And they have seen through example that, boy, doesn't it look fun to be in charge?
Right, to be in charge.
And your life is together. Like, imagine what a little kid would think if they're sitting in the sandbox and suddenly mommy comes out and she starts putting sand in her pants.
Right.
Like my son does.
Yes.
He would go, this lady is a psychopath.
Right. They wouldn't exactly be able to put it all together and rationalize it entirely, but it would, something deep inside would say, this is the person I'm looking up to.
Yes.
I'm supposed to look up to this person. And when you're down at that kid's level, they know this is weird. There is a structure that needs to be in place.
What's interesting is that you have, and it must just because it perpetuates the industry and it's good for business, that they keep pushing this idea that kids need constant questions asked of them.
Yeah.
That was a really interesting part of the conversation when you and Sherry were talking about it. I have seen this in my own life where it's like my instinct sometimes when my kids come home from schools, tell me everything about school. Did you have a good day? All these, just peppering them with questions, almost like you're trying to make up time because you haven't seen them for a little bit. They don't want it. They don't want to be asked a million questions, like especially as they get older. But you could still have conversations with them that are fine. But my wife is like, why are you asking them so many questions? And I'm like, I don't know. I kind of thought like,
Want a great question for your kid?
Yeah, I'd love it.
Tell me what you learned about yourself today.
Good question.
So And it doesn't focus entirely on their feelings, but it's like, what'd you learn about yourself? Well, I learned that I can handle this. I learned that I could do this. It's showing progress. And it's them telling you the progress that they've made. What have you learned about yourself today? Did you go out into the world to figure out, oh, I do better with this or worse with that? I've lost my patience. I'm a better at coloring than I thought I was. Whatever it is. But this, what has happened in today's world, and they say this is because of parents, primarily the parents who are doing gentle parenting, is because they came from a divorced family. They also have money, and they didn't want their kids to go through what they went through. So they go to a therapist. They basically turn over all responsibility to the therapist, and they're always getting the kids to talk about their feelings. Well, the kids say, why are my feelings always so important? I guess I should continue to have a problem with my feelings so I continue to get attention.
Yeah, that was it. When I heard you guys say that, it just kind of finally plants a flag in this thing that every parent understands, which is like your kids, their little brains are just, they're scattered. They're running all around. They're doing all this stuff. If they're focusing on feelings all the time, then it elevates it and they go, oh, I guess however I'm feeling right now is the most important thing in the world. Yeah. Instead of the reality, which they will discover later in life, which is that no adult cares about what another adult is feeling unless you're dating that person and you're trying to fall in love with that
person. But this is applicable to your situation. Schreier also said, she pointed out, she saw five kids get out of this large car, and the oldest kid got out and reached out to the back seat and got his little sister out. When you are in a family with just one kid, the family is singularly focused, the mom and dad, on that one kid. It's all about that one kid. But larger families, bigger groups, each kid realizes, I'm no more important than anybody else in there, and we'll all work on this together. So they're all equally involved in other people's lives. But with the one child, it is all about that kid. How's that kid feeling? What are you doing? What's going on? You're this focus, all this. But when you realize you have more and more kids, right? You have more and more kids. It's like, I don't know. Yeah. You know, eventually it's like all the kids are just raising themselves because the parents just didn't have time anymore. But when you have that one kid, it's that one project.
Yeah. Oh my gosh, it's a fascinating. We don't have time to talk about it anymore, but I could talk about this endlessly.
It's called Bad Therapy. Again, so Barry Weiss's podcast is called Honestly. She talks to Schreier there, and the book is called Bad Therapy by Abigail Schreier.
I'm going to read it. That's fascinating. That is John Curley from the John Curley and Sherry Elicker Show. You can hear him every day on this station between 3 and 7 p.m., the show right before ours. All right, we got a lot more coming up on the show. Stick around. We're going to be right back here on Cairo Nights.
You're listening to Cairo Nights with Jake Skorheim.
Welcome back to Cairo Nights. All right, I want to play a funny clip for you guys. Do you guys know who Carol Burnett is? This is going to make me sound like way older than I am. And I swear I'm not. I'm so young. I'm so hip. No, I'm actually 40 years old. So, I guess I'm not super young anymore. But whatever. It doesn't matter. You guys know. It's cool. Age is just a number. All right, so Carol Burnett she used to have the Carol Burnett Show. Super, super funny, like really, really funny. And when I was a kid, my mom and dad were really protective about the kinds of things that we would watch, which is why my childhood was spent watching the same TV shows as somebody who grew up in the 1950s or the 1960s. We used to watch The Andy Griffith Show. Here's the only things I was allowed to watch as a kid, which maybe informs why I am the way that I am these days. Let's see. I watched The Andy Griffith Show. Which I loved. I just thought it was so hilarious. Ron Howard was great. Don Knotts was just the funniest guy in the world as Barney. And I know that we're not talking about Barney right now. We're not talking about Don Knotts. We're talking about Carol Burnett. But if we're just talking about old comedians, the physical comedy that Don Knotts accomplished in every single thing that he did was very impressive. You can still go back and watch old episodes. There's no new episodes, so I guess they're all old episodes. You can still go back and watch Andy Griffith's Show and just laugh out loud because Don Knotts is so funny as Barney. So great. All right, so we used to watch Andy Griffith's Show. We also used to watch Matlock, that was the more mature show that we would watch in the daytime, especially during the summer times. We weren't allowed to watch a lot of TV, so we would watch, we would get to watch an episode of Matlock, an episode of Little House on the Prairie, and then we'd have to go outside for the rest of the day. And that was my TV experience as a child. I don't know if that was a good thing or a bad thing. I think it was a probably a pretty good thing. I mean, those are very wholesome things. So Carol Burnett's show, anyway, was in this rotation of shows that we were allowed to watch from time to time, depending on when they were on. Again, when I was a kid, you couldn't just choose what you wanted to watch and watch it at all times. So Carol Burnett's very funny. That's all I need to say about that. She's 91 years old. She's not a young lady anymore. And she is still super sharp and super with it. And number one, she is still very, very funny, which is not a surprise because she spent her entire life being hilarious. She was on Live with Kelly and Mark. That's a married couple. They host a show now. It used to be Live with Regis and Kelly, and then Regis Philbin passed away. I think she was with Ryan Seacrest for a while. And then at some point, they were like, hey, what if we just stick her with her husband? They have a chemistry and see how that goes. And I don't know how it's going. I don't watch the show. But Carol Burnett was talking with them today. They are all connected to soap operas in some ways. Carol Burnett apparently loves soap operas. And I guess Kelly and Mark both come from the soap opera world, according to this article that I was reading. I don't know that that's true, but I think it's true. Carol Burnett was telling them about how much she used to be obsessed with soap operas, so much so that when they would go on vacation, and this was before the internet, and this was before it was easy to get this information, she wanted to keep up on these soap operas. And so she just told a really funny story. She's 91, and I felt like I wanted to highlight it because she's really funny at 91. So good for her.
My husband and my kids were going to go on a trip this one summer to London, Paris, Italy, Rome, and Lake Como. Mm-hmm. And this was before they had VCRs or TiVo or anything.
Right.
And I thought, how am I going to last if I don't know what's going on in Pine Valley?
Right. You
know? And so I had a friend of mine said, he sent me a telegram to every hotel on Friday to the concierge to bring me up to date.
A recap.
On what was going on. So we got to Lake Como and there were some friends who were there. And so we all had dinner, and all was lovely. And then it was kind of late, so we went to bed, and there was a knock at the door around 2 o'clock in the morning. I thought, what's going on here? We opened the door, and it was the manager of the hotel, and he was shaking. He had this telegram.
No.
I wrote down what the telegram said.
Yes,
uh-oh. Erica is still in a coma. Mark slipped again and ran away from rehab. Mona has to have exploratory surgery. Doesn't look good. Chuck has learned that Donna, who's carrying his baby, was once a hooker. Hope you're having a great trip.
She's so funny. I don't even know if that story is true. I don't know if I believe that it's true, but still very funny. So good for you, for Carol Burnett, for being 91. Still so funny. Wow. All right. I hope you guys have had a great night. I hope you have enjoyed the show. I hope you have laughed at this show and thought that it was an enjoyable experience. It certainly was for me. I enjoyed it. We have a great show coming up tomorrow night. We're already working on it. Make sure you get back here and check us out. Listen tomorrow night. Download the podcast if you haven't already. And now I gotta go get some sleep because I'm tired and I want to do this again tomorrow full of energy and vigor and pep. All right, I gotta get out of here. Night-night.